The Steve Cochran Show.
Do you condemn any interference by Russia in the American election?
I don't know Putin. He said nice things about me. If we got along well, that would be good.
Well, that's because he'd rather have a puppet as president of the United States.
No puppet.
And it's pretty clear.
You're the puppet. We have some bad hombres here, and we're going to get them out. Excuse me. My turn.
Why would so many different women from so many different circumstances over so many different years, why would they all make up these stories?
Those stories have been largely debunked. I have a feeling how they came. I believe it was her campaign that did it.
What was his response? Well, he held a number of big rallies where he said that he could not possibly have done those things to those women because they were not attractive enough.
She should not be allowed to run. And just in that respect, I say it's rigged.
But, sir, there is a tradition in this country. In fact, one of the prides of this country is the peaceful transition of power. Are you saying you're not prepared now to commit to that principle?
What I'm saying is that I will tell you at the time. I'll keep you in suspense.
You're not up to doing the job. He's talking down our democracy. And I, for one, am appalled.
Lots of luck, Hillary. Thanks a lot for doing a great job.
And you thought the Cubs game was entertaining?
Constitution? We don't need no stinking Constitution.
Hi, I'm Steve Cochran, your local bad hombre. And Dave Ennett's here. Dave, of course, is a Russian puppet.
I'm not, but you're the puppet.
No, you're the puppet. It's clear you're the puppet. Everybody knows you're the puppet. Andrea's here. Her big stories are all rigged. Or one big conspiracy on the Steve Cochran Show.
Can I be an hombre?
No, you haven't qualified for hombre. Right. You have to pass the hombre test.
Right. As to whether or not that's true, Steve, I'll leave you in suspense.
I love that. He takes the absolute necessity, the one thing you have to have.
Right.
The concession phone call and the acceptance by you as the leader of your party that the other party won and goes, I'm not sure.
I'll keep you in suspense.
I'll get back to you. The Trumpster had himself a pretty good debate for 60 to 70% of it. Easily his best. The other 30% was so friggin' crazy you can't even chart it. All over the country, therapists are going, am I working? Am I working? We need a couch here. The theories are beyond explanation. The explanation of the theories gives me a headache. But this morning we'll tackle it. Chuck Todd will be on later. And in addition to Chuck Todd, Rick Pearson will join us. We haven't talked to Rick in a while. Pat Brady as well. Eric Edelstein. Eric Edelstein must think the election's over. He's not on today. So Eric is on a plane somewhere. He's in North Carolina or something. But the election is not over. And it still comes down to turnout. And if you believe Trump's your guy, you missed the debate. If you believe Trump's your guy, you need to vote. If you believe Hillary's your girl, you need to vote. One of them's going to be president. I'm just as sorry about that as you are. And you've got to show up and vote. Because what you don't need, this is not, it's not an experiment, kids.
No.
Not a dry run. At 6:13, I know you guys talked about this a little bit, but let me just reiterate. The Cubs apparently are now angry. Apparently they saw ball, hit ball, and they saw ball, hit ball a lot.
Mm-hmm. And who doubted? Who doubted?
No, you did.
Wait a minute. Who you doubted? I had to, like, hold your hand and...
He did. He cuddled me. Yeah. Before you got here, though.
Yeah, wept openly.
Okay. Yeah.
Not today.
Yeah.
Today you've been fine.
Today I was fine.
10-2, the final, Dave. Who is the big star?
Well, the two guys who were, as I said in the sportscast, the slumpingest Cubs.
Mm-hmm.
Rizzo and Russell had big nights. Russell broke it open with a two-run homer and in the fourth inning when the Cubs scored four times. And then... Dodgers looked like they had the makings of a big rally. It was 5-0. They had the bases loaded and nobody out. The Cubs got out of it with relatively little damage, 5-2, and then the Cubs piled on with five more runs.
Right. So, yeah. And now what happens? You guarantee the World Series will be clinched at Wrigley Field.
Yeah.
Oh, I know you're saying you got to win two more. But, Dave, I'm saying you guarantee the World Series will be clinched.
So, yeah, somebody's going to clinch the World Series at Wrigley Field.
Yeah.
Safe bet, yeah.
Well, that's true.
But yeah, I said, and I'll say it again, the Cubs are going to win this series. I had them winning it in seven. And
I had them winning it in whatever the final number is because I've forgotten what I said in the beginning.
I think I said seven as well.
I think you said six.
I did.
I said six.
I said seven, you said six, and Dave said seven.
I said seven.
Yeah.
I'm willing to take whatever the number is. And
Didn't you say 8 at one point?
I may have. Yeah, I may have. Look, I'm the one that's been driving the Cubs bandwagon since mid to late August. So I've been in this the entire way.
You're the one who said Fox would like 9 or 10 games, I believe.
Yeah. Good call. Bears and Packers tonight. I don't know a time I've ever seen less interest in a Bears Packers game than this one.
Someone did a Twitter. You can do the Twitter question: what will you be watching, Cubs or Packers? And I think it was 90-10.
Yeah, like, I mean,
you'd be watching the Cubs. I love football, Packers.
So I'll watch. And this is Game 5, so I'll watch some of it. You know, until like midway through kickoff when it's over. But that's right, Dave. Though the ball is in the air on kickoff, I believe the game will have been completed. But I've never, ever, ever, ever seen less interest, even when you knew the team was bad.
There's zero buzz. Thursday night, I think.
No, most of it is they suck.
And Sunday's game, the Jacksonville game, that probably had something. And the fact the Cubs are playing. I mean,
More buzz about the tailgating lately than the Bears games.
Yeah, it's more fun in the parking lot than actually going into the stadium. Yeah.
Well, I guarantee you it'll be more fun at Lambeau Field tonight. When it comes to tailgating. I mean, they do.
This, of course, comes on the heels of a really, really bad Packers performance. The Packers are terrible against the Cowboys.
And what usually happens after they have
Aaron Rodgers gets angry and throws 19 touchdowns.
But you know, they've got a lot of injuries in their secondary.
They've got emotional problems.
They do. And Rodgers has not played well. He is not.
A lot of fried food, high cholesterol. Green Bay's got issues.
This game probably won't be, could be closer than people think because the Packers have their own problems. Mm-hmm. It's not all about how bad the Bears might be.
How about Jay Cutler limps onto the field in a surprise return to action, comes out and throws 3 touchdowns, unfortunately with 5 interceptions.
Are you talking
Jim McMahon at Minnesota in 1985 on a Thursday
Willis
night?
Willis Reed with the New York Knicks in the 1970-whatever championship series. No, I don't see that happening either. It's 6:17. We'll get into that later as well. Hample actually will be on tomorrow to go over the carnage. Today, Ryan Dempster.
It might not be carnage.
You apparently haven't seen the team. Ryan Dempster. Listen, I hope I'm wrong. Yeah. So the carnage is tomorrow, the carnage coverage. Okay. Full carnage coverage. Ryan Dempster will be on today talking about the Cubs setting up the homecoming. It'd be great if the Cubs win today. But if they don't win today, then they just wrap it up in 7. I mean, 10-2 last night. What a message pitch that was. That was a high, hard one. That was chin music, baby. Mm-hmm.
That was we're back music. So.
Also, Tim Allen live in studio later. And in that 7 o'clock hour, we talk politics. Micah Halpern on the thugs of the world and what's actually happening in Mosul. Which, by the way, Donald, was not a war started to help Hillary Clinton win an election.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Do you condemn any interference by Russia in the American election?
By Russia or anybody else?
You condemn their interference?
Of course I condemn. Of course I can. I don't know Putin. I have no idea.
I never met Putin.
This is not my best friend. She wants open borders. Now we can talk about Putin. I don't know Putin. He said nice things about me. If we got along well, that would be good.
Another problem there. Chris Wallace is a puppet. He's one of them Russian puppets. Heard about it. He's Boris the Russian puppet. It's 6:23. Alex Stone. Nobody better than Alex Stone. You still got a twitch from watching that last night. Good morning, Alex. How are you?
A twitch? Is that what we're going to call it today? Yeah. I guess that's what that is.
Yes. Yeah. You know what you are? You're a puppet.
I'm not you're a puppet, Steve.
You're a puppet. I'm not a puppet.
You're a puppet.
Listen, I thought Trump 60, maybe 70% of the night was as good as he's been by far. But the other 30 was so off the rails crazy, he negated the first 70.
Well, especially the first 20 minutes, we all looked at each other in the press room and went, wait a second, he's doing this. Like, he's not jumping in and talking over her. He's not calling her names this is a traditional debate. The debate watchers will say, okay, it was a good debate. And then after about 20 minutes, it got back into the old stuff of, no, you're a puppet. No, I didn't do that. No, I'm not. And you know, wrong, all of that
right, getting in there.
That it became the Trump that that we've become more accustomed to. The big moment of the night, well, there were several, but the big moment last night, Steve, was when he was asked about accepting the results of the election and refusing to commit to accepting those results. You had a lot of people saying, well, wait a second. Up until last night, he had said that, he would accept them. Mike Pence this week had said that the campaign would accept the results. Today, Trump's campaign manager, Kellyanne Conway, saying, well, wait a second. It could be just as something as simple as something like Bush v. Gore. Here's how she put it to us.
He said he's going to take a look at the results. Remember, Al Gore did concede. He conceded to Governor George W. Bush and then called and retracted the concession and went on to contest the results and went all the way to the United States Supreme Court.
But
the only way that works, Kellyanne Conway, is if we have an unprecedented Halley's Comet of another Electoral College tie until we know better.
Right, and hanging chads and everything else. But she's saying as long as there isn't something showing widespread abuse or irregularities in the voting that he will accept the results. But we haven't heard him say that, and he's made it clear in the past that nobody speaks for Trump but Trump. And so now we wait to find out today when he makes a stop in Ohio on his way back to New York if at that rally he is going to clarify that. But she says that yes, he will accept them as long as there's not something super funky with the vote.
I got to tell you, you're such a better man than I am, and everybody at ABC News and really all the networks. This surrogate business is so out of hand. And by the way, this goes for Hillary surrogates as well. They look in a camera and they look in the eyes of the reporter asking the questions and they say things that they absolutely cannot believe. And, you know, on the cab ride over to the studio, they're concocting their BS answer to try to get something in play that maybe if the most ardent supporter is listening, we'll still hook into it. The surrogate thing is so out of hand, it's ridiculous. And I got to believe there's going to be beyond this, even though this isn't the topic, beyond this, the surrogate thing is going to take a step back the next cycle. It has to.
Well, and because we get our hands on the surrogate emails that the campaigns on both sides tell the surrogates what to say. They work up these arguments, and then they put it out, and they say, here are the arguments you need to make. And there's immediately a lot of debate, if you want to call it damage control on both sides, or concocting arguments that sometimes are a little bit far-fetched, but they say, okay, this is the way we're going to go down. And what we have heard last night from both sides, whether it be about the WikiLeaks emails or about the things that Trump said last night, that they have tried to explain them away over why they were said. Trump also getting attention last night for calling those crossing the border hombres. That's seen by Hispanics as racist
that's
and
right.
derogatory.
That's right. You're not
and,
only a puppet, you're
went,
a bad hombre.
You don't say hombre. Yeah. So his campaign saying, well, he was talking in general about those who are in the country. Interesting, though, Kellyanne Conway last night retweeted a message immediately after that, making it sound like the campaign did not tell him to say that. That hombre was Trump being Trump, and the rest of the campaign was what they had prepped him to say. So it's almost like they immediately were stepping away from that, saying, whoa, that term you just heard, that wasn't us.
But we have some bad hombres here, and we're going to get them out.
Bad. Alex, the margin is narrowed, I know, with some of these early polls saying that she won again. We knew it was going to be nasty, but I was just disheartened with how disrespectful he was. You know, you expect the nastiness, you expect the back and forth, but to say you're not going to support the poll numbers and the first name calling, I just was very disheartened by the disrespect. Did you see a lot of that as well?
Well, and the polls, as they begin to come out over the next 24 hours, and then the polls about the general, the election itself, and not just the debate, will likely show if this is going to move the needle at all. I was talking to a debate expert last night who has been to all of these debates. He's from University of Michigan, and he doesn't believe that this is going to do a lot right now to move that needle, because Hillary Clinton didn't have that amazing of a night where Trump supporters are going to jump to her side. If there was anything, what could she do that would get those supporters who dislike her so much to her side? And Trump didn't have that incredible or that poor of a night that would make people flee him or come to him. So You know, we'll have to see the way this works out. But there were a lot of comments, you know, whether it be you're a puppet or cutting her off and telling her, excuse me, my turn, when he had just asked her a question and she started to answer it and he cut her off again. And even down to the refusing to call out Russia and Vladimir Putin for hacking, where he kept saying, nobody knows. Our country doesn't know who it was. Nobody knows. In fact, U.S. intelligence has made it pretty clear. They have proof. U.S. intelligence officials have been telling ABC News, they've been telling a lot of different news organizations that the proof points to Russia doing this hacking. But last night he was adamant it's not Russia doing the hacking. Where's the proof it isn't Russia doing the hacking? But they went back and forth on that as well.
17 agencies have stepped up. And every time he opens his mouth and says, I got 50, I got 100, I got 200 generals and people backing me, you discount the work of the people who keep this country safe. That's the great frustration that Republicans ought to have and many do have with Trump, is he doesn't think out what the implications of his statement are beyond it falling out of his face. It's really striking.
Well, and his supporters agree with him. You know, I woke up this morning an hour ago to a Twitter message calling me all kinds of names saying, where's your proof on these intelligence reports? And you say, well, it's the intelligence. It's the people who do this, the very people. Unless I'm going to go and try to do cyber investigations, we have to trust the people who are doing this on behalf of keeping our country safe. So his supporters do seem to be in line, at least some of them, with what he was saying last night, as today they are defending him, waking up based on what he said about the intelligence community.
Last question, I'll let you run. This is Alex Stone from ABC News. There was a point in the debate where, and it was an odd moment for him to do it, but she had done a pretty good job of needling him and sticking him. Stick and jab, jab and move. And he responded with, such a nasty woman. Coming off of the 2 weeks he's had, that can't help.
No, and we'll see today, again, as we start to get some more of the reaction from this, how much of an impact that may have, especially with women calling her a nasty woman, and the implication of that and the feeling that the people get out of it. We did hear from some voters last night who they said, speaking of nasty, that they thought the overall debate would have been nastier last night. That yeah, it had its moments, but it also had its pretty straightforward moments of substance that they thought, being the last one, that he was going to come in and just do everything that we didn't expect him to do, which he didn't do. It'll all shake out now. We'll see. We've got 2.5 weeks left. The campaign travel schedules are going to pick up. He's got tomorrow 3 stops in, I believe, 3 different states. Her campaign schedule, her campaign says will pick up, even though it's not on the schedule yet to pick up. We really get into it now with multiple states every day, and this is what we see from the campaigns in the last couple of weeks.
It's Alex Stone, ABC News. Great work. Thanks, buddy.
You got it. Thanks, guys.
See you. By the way, the nasty woman comment, I think unacceptable as well. In light of what's happened this past week,
such a nasty woman. Big story time next, 720 WGN.
The Steve Cochran Show.
I think my father will always do the right thing. That's the type of person he is. But to your point, if he'll either win or he won't win, and I believe he'll accept the outcome either way.
We will absolutely accept the results of the election. Look, the American people will speak in an election that will culminate on November the 8th.
Donald Trump will accept the results of the election.
I want to ask you here on this stage tonight, do you make the same commitment that you will absolutely, sir, that you will absolutely accept the result of this election?
I will look at it at the time. I'm not looking at anything now. I'll look at it at the time.
Are you saying you're not prepared now to commit to that principle?
What I'm saying is that I will tell you at the time. I'll keep you in suspense.
Yeah, that's pretty much what we do. We have the presidential election, then it's a big surprise party afterwards. We do it at Chuck E. Cheese, and then the losing candidate gets to jump in the balls right before he says, oh, yeah, the other guy's won. Unbelievable. 6:43. I believe it was last Sunday that Chuck Todd, or as I like to call him, one bad hombre. I believe Chuck Todd from Meet the Press was told by Mike Pence in the clip you heard there, oh, yeah, we'll definitely accept the results. Maybe they don't have cell phones, Chuck. Maybe they don't get the call, Don.
It is, you know, he really does, actually, the more I listen to that quote one more time, he thinks this is The Apprentice or something sometimes. He really does. I really think he thinks he's helping to produce a great TV show.
Well, he'll have
reality series.
Based on the end of last night, he'll have plenty of time to do that.
Right. I mean, it is just, you know, he's like, okay, it'll be the ultimate cliffhanger, you know? And it's like, that's how he'll sort of rationalize toning it down. Like, you can almost picture that time. I mean, it's unbelievable to hear his daughter, to hear Kellyanne Conway, to hear Mike Pence. I mean, how many times it's as if they're taking a proverbial baseball bat publicly to him. Like, just shut up and say this. Can you imagine what would today look like without that comment?
Oh, yeah, because, listen, I said this earlier. 70% of last night, the voices in his head were quiet enough that he actually delivered the goods. But the other 30 was so off the rails and so non-fact-based that he just washed the rest of it away.
That's right. I mean, you know, with two moments, you know, there's that one, obviously, on whether or not he will accept it, the results. And then the second was right at the end. And a question about Social Security, and, you know, she needled him. He couldn't help himself. She's a nasty woman. That comment could be as damaging with women voters as anything as any other groping. Because it was just so, it just is going to remind some women of just every chauvinistic male they felt that they've ever dealt with.
Right, right. It's exactly right. Andrea was at Hamilton last night and watching the debate and watching the Cubs game in her Uber. And as soon as I brought up the nasty woman comment, your eyes went black, smoke came out of your ears. And I think every female probably had the same response.
It's infuriating to me. You know why? It's not only demeaning, but it's disrespectful. You know, that's been the whole thing. Take away the fact that Hillary Clinton's a woman and have a normal debate with her where you're not dealing with a normal person. But it's disrespectful. And yeah, you know what? It was interesting to see Hamilton, see history in the making in 1776, how these guys would have laid down their lives, and many did, for their country, and then to watch this. The circus. It's unbelievable.
That's why Donald Trump's musical, Not Hamilton, is going to be a huge hit next year.
Breitbart, it'll be called.
How big a deal is the bad hombre thing?
He has done so much to help Hillary Clinton with different constituency groups. You know, as if Latinos didn't have another way to sort of, you know, poke and prod to say, hey, get out and vote and do these things. I mean, you know, one of the most fascinating aspects to sort of Trump's meltdown over the last 2 weeks, between starting with the Access Hollywood tape and going, is that there's actual energy at Hillary Clinton events. They have, you know, there is this, he has created a reverse energy in an odd way, the more he has done this. And I think
that
the hombre comment is one of those that's going to help do the same thing. I mean, you know, on her own, you know, she has struggled to get the enthusiasm going for her. But Trump has done it, has basically become her best turnout weapon.
Well, you know, our mutual friend Pat Brady has been saying it forever, and that is that she is an incredibly non-aspirational candidate. And as you said, Chuck, he continues to have it teed up for him. And instead of hitting it, he gets that incredible, insecure 12-year-old that he is and just reacts and lashes out. And, Chuck, you talked about this forever ago, and Pat did as well. And I think I brought it up, too. There's no strategy with Donald Trump. Everybody wants to analyze his strategy. He rolls out of bed in the morning and starts talking. That's the strategy.
He bragged about that in one of his biographies, one of the great, you know, profiles of him. It's like, you know, yeah, he doesn't plan his day. He basically, you know, wakes up. That's why he just likes to be a reactor. You know, he doesn't even have a strict strategy for his business, you know, and on a day-to-day basis. I mean, he, you know, on that front, he does overall, but that he enjoys doing that way. Well, that's how he's done politics. And I'll tell you, that's fine in a primary when you can whip up a frenzy of a passionate third of the party, but that's still all he's got. And that's still who he talks to. He has yet to figure out how to talk to any other part of the country.
Pat, say hi to Chuck.
Hey, Chuck, how you doing?
Hey, how are you, Pat?
Great, thanks. Hey, in the ranking of presidential debate gaffes, where does this one go? Is this as bad as some we've seen in the past?
Boy, it's, you know, I think this one, it's not like this one moment. I still think sending her to jail comment will still, I actually think that comment of his will live in sort of debate lore 4, 8, 12 years from now.
Right.
But it's sort of the timing of this one. And it's sort of, put it this way, if Paul Ryan is not Speaker of the House, if Republicans don't control the House, then we will say it was the biggest debate gap in political history. Because I do think without that gaffe, he did as well as if you're a Republican down the ballot as you could have asked for. You know, starting with the Supreme Court, making sort of the very elementary case. He isn't very sophisticated at making the case, but he made a basic elementary case of reminding people, really, Chris Wallace did a better job of that, yeah, of reminding base Republican voters, hey, the Supreme Court's at stake here. So it was, you know, if they could have muted Donald Trump, right? If you're Marco Rubio or Richard Burr, these guys in tough Senate races, if you could have muted him at 30 minutes into the debate and hoped nobody heard anything else from him, you were going to be happy. But now I think this thing is so, Pat, I guess they go a long way around. If it has the impact of basically having the bottom now fall out for the GOP in all these races down the ballot, then it will go down as the worst gaffe in debate history.
And I'll let you go on this, Chuck Todd from Meet the Press. But one of the really disturbing things to me last night, too, was his refusal to accept that Russia is behind the hacking that's gone on in this campaign, because the damage of discounting 17 security agencies that keep this country safe and delegitimizing them becomes exponential, because it gets spread from person to person and website to website amongst those who believe the nonsense.
No, here's the thing. And this is where he has no nimbleness. Let's just look at him as a politician, right? He just has no nimbleness. You know, he doesn't even know how to have it both ways. Be tough on Russia and say, this is awful, and I can't wait till we get to the bottom of this. But I'm just as disturbed at what I've read. You know,
right.
he just has no nimbleness to him. Look at last night. Chris Wallace asked about WikiLeaks. She kind of struggles, okay, with the open borders thing. She pivots to Russia, and what does he do? He takes the bait and starts talking about Putin. You know, at this point, you almost are like, you know, if you're not a decent enough politician to even pivot and spin, maybe we really shouldn't want you in the White House, because sometimes you got to learn how to pivot and spin to survive and lead another day.
It's Chuck Todd, Meet the Press, and of course MTP Daily on MSNBC. I look forward to Chuck getting a long vacation starting, I hope, on November 9th.
Yes, you and my wife both.
So, and by the way, Packers Bears tonight.
Yeah, boy, it's the Mike McCarthy save his job game.
Well, I was going to say, is this your reward for putting up with all the coverage of the debate? You get to watch your Packers beat up the Bears.
I guess, but I don't have a lot of confidence that they know how to beat up any team right now. But, you know, the Bears are usually what cures it these days in the NFL.
Yeah.
Getting them on your schedule.
People fighting to get them scheduled. So.
Who's going to watch that game in Chicago tonight? Anybody?
Well, we were talking about this earlier.
Cubs-Dodgers.
There's never been less buzz for a Bears-Packers game in my lifetime. And no recollection of any time where Bears-Packers created this lack of interest. Yeah.
But if the Cubs weren't, if the Cubs Dodgers game wasn't at the same time, people would be watching.
Still worse, man. Still worse.
No doubt. But this is going to be a big one. This game five could be the series.
Yep.
So thanks, Chuck. Talk to you later.
Okay.
There you go. That's Chuck Todd from Meet the Press. Imagine, as much as we swim in it here, imagine it being Chuck Todd.
I know. He's in the thick of it. I loved his comment about the reverse energy, though.
That's a good point.
Because really, that is what Trump is generating, reverse energy.
She has tried to hand him this election. Pat, you've been saying this for a year. She has tried to hand him this election over and over again, and she's got so much to answer for. But he's such a child, he can't not lash out and defend himself because somebody might think negatively of him.
Wrong.
You know, when he was writing stuff down in the middle, I tweeted this out last night. You know what he writes down? I am better looking than most people. I am very smart. I am right. Everyone else is wrong.
Wrong.
We nominated the only Republican in the universe that can't beat Hillary Clinton.
All right. I just want to do this quickly here. Hillary Clinton, you can't really hear Hillary here because she sort of chimes in to sing with Harry. This is way back. This has got to be middle 90s, Dave? Something
yes.
Like that.
Well, I mean, Harry's last season was 97.
Yeah, so I'm thinking this is 94, 95. Anyway, listen. There you go. That's all you get. That's Hillary singing the stretch. By the way, I was at the game that day, and there were these two women. I've told the story before. Two suburban moms sitting behind me. I thought, well, these women seem nice. You know, I'm sure they're lovely people. She goes out in the field, and they stand up giggling and hold up a sign that says, "We slept with your husband, too."
Oh, no.
Classy.
Welcome to town, Hillary. Meanwhile, Trump, and Jake, who is Trump with? It's not Melania, right? Because this is back in 2000. Is this just a girlfriend or something?
No, it's Melania.
Oh, it is Melania.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I don't know if they were just dating at the time.
All right. Trump and Melania, circa 2000. Listen.
And a teleprompter, by the way, because he did not know the words, if you watch the video.
Well, they're hard to remember.
1, 2, 3, take me out to the ball game, take me out to the crowd, buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jacks, I don't care if I never come back, root, root for the home team, if they don't win it's a shame.
Apparently, it doesn't say, let's get some runs on the prompter. And as Jake pointed out, root, root, root for the home team. On the teleprompter, it's got to be home in parentheses where the lyrics are.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So he didn't even insert Cubs.
He didn't even say Cubs. It's terrible.
That's the cardinal rule of guest conducting. I was there that day, and I remember him walking along the catwalk there behind where the suites are to get up to the press box, to get up to the booth. Yeah. And the reaction of the crowd, and it was sort of like this mixed reaction. It was like, what's he doing here?
Right. Yeah. What was he doing there?
Was that must have been about the time they announced the building, right? They probably announced that the hotel was going to go up.
At least if you use a teleprompter, we now know he can read.
Limited.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
So we're now fighting for muscle that we had. All she had to do is stay there. Now we're going into game. And the only reason they did it is because she's running for the office of president. And they want to look tough. They want to look good.
I'm just amazed that he seems to think that the Iraqi government and our allies and everybody else launched the attack on Mosul to help me in this election. But that's how Donald thinks.
You're not wrong. I mean, if you go with that theory, you have to believe that all of our allies decided to put their people at risk for the sake of Hillary Clinton being elected. And that's the sole reason to go into Mosul. You can't add it up. Again, for all the times that Hillary Clinton and her nonsense tried to hand the election to Trump, he continues to hand it right back. We didn't even get into the fact yesterday, by the way, Don Jr. says, well, the presidency would be a step down for my father. That's the kind of respect we're looking for.
Again, complete disrespect.
Micah Halpern. Nobody knows thugs better than Micah Halpern. And he speaks about it all over the country. As a matter of fact, if you're listening and you have an opportunity to hire speakers for anybody, I would hire Micah in a minute, but he won't work for $8. And why should he? Micah is MICHHALPERN. Just Google that anytime. You get whatever the latest is. He's writing on these things. But he's the guy that told us when ISIS originally came in to play, by the way, a year after Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State, but when ISIS came into play, that the Iraqis laid down their arms and ran, which is why they were weaponized, which is why they were able to get Mosul and all that. So I wanted to get Mike on to talk about whether or not Mosul will be taken back and how long it'll take, among other things. Good morning, Mr. Halpern.
It's always good to speak to you.
The status of Mosul this morning is what?
Well, look, this is going to be a much longer event than one would think. Just like in other towns, when Iraqi forces or Syrian forces have come to try to take it back, it's gone seesawed back and forth and back and forth. Because it's not just a town. You know, we're talking a city of over 2 million people.
Right.
And when you have a city of 2 million people, you just don't take it. You know, it's through a community by community, neighborhood by neighborhood, and house by house. And in many ways, ISIS is pretty dug in there. That's one. Two is there are other elements that are much more significant than simply the battle. I wrote about this a few days ago. One of the major elements that needs to be discussed is that the taking of Mosul back includes the the taking of natural resources that are the foundation of Mosul and ISIS's daily activity, especially their natural gas and their oil fields. And that's very important, in addition to the banks that they have control over. And once those things slip, then they have to then rely on, ISIS has to rely on other forms of income. And they were producing from this over $1 billion a year. That's very important. So they're kicking up and ratcheting up fundraising activities from around the world, kidnapping and extortion rings. Now this becomes very, very important. So Mosul is going to probably fall. I don't know how long it will stay in the hands of the Iraqis and the U.S. and the allies and everything else. But things go back and forth. That's what happens, especially because probably one of the major forces going in there and fighting the Mosul are the Kurds. But last night, the Turks launched a raid against Kurds, killing 200 people. You know, it's like crazy.
So there's a bunch of tribal scores that are going to be settled in the midst of this, and we're not talking about the world's most brightest level-headed people in regards to the rank and file of ISIS on the streets there. Once things get really bad, are they running?
Right. Intelligence has nothing to do with it. It has to do with emotion, which is very, very important here. So there's emotions that are extremely high here and hatreds that go back for generations. And that's part of the question mark that the United States has not been able to figure out in dealing with and struggling with and against ISIS in the area. Who's on our side versus who isn't? Well, there's no side here. They're only fighting for themselves.
Right.
This is what people don't seem to understand. In the United States, both of you, it's either for us or against this kind of thing. And none of that actually exists. So Mosul itself is moving in the direction of the where the United States wants it to be, that is freeing it from ISIS control. But on the other hand, there are massive other impacts and side effects. Now, I read a very insightful piece yesterday that's suggesting that ISIS will be using alternative weapons. They're also within the next week or so, and that's those are chemical and biological type weapons, if they have them at their disposal. If that's the case, the United States is gearing up for that and hoping and helping their allies on the ground confront those issues also.
All right, so before we run out of time, I think a key question here is about the Mosul Dam, this giant earthen dam that has to be constantly reinforced so it doesn't collapse and literally flood downstream all the way to Baghdad. Is there a chance that as ISIS is kicked out of Mosul, they would do something to blow this dam up, and do they have access to do that?
Right. So that was a big worry that we had 2 years ago, when ISIS came into the region and took Mosul overnight. And overnight, in the middle of the day, I shouldn't even say overnight in other seconds, that what would they do with the dam? And it was in their best interest to keep it, which is why they did, both monetarily and in terms of natural resources, as well as in terms of control of the region. So they are a suicidal group, as we know. So would they then, as they leave, do anything they could to cause as much havoc as possible? I do not think they will. However, I do know that the resources of the allies, the Iraqis, forces, and the United States and the allies are doing their best to make certain that dam stays intact. And that's an important element, because that could wipe out, forget about the agriculture, could wipe out the water sources and the power, as well as just the drinking water of massive components of Iraq.
And, of course, President Obama would like all of this to be settled as quickly as possible because he'd like some credit for it. And the absolute truth is, if Obama had taken ISIS more seriously and not labeled him the JV team in the beginning, maybe we wouldn't be this far down the road.
Right. That's where your analysis is a little off in terms of the Clinton-esque question, which was it Clinton or not, is it pro-Clinton? There are always things that presidents do at the end of their term to try to secure their position in history better. And this might be one of those things. I'm not certain it is, but it could be one of those things. That said, it's not something that's done overnight. This is a conflict with ISIS. Even though there are only several thousand people. We're not dealing with a lot of fighters. We're dealing with at most 30,000 fighters, period, in Syria and Iraq together. So it's not a lot of fighters. So if we're not dealing with a lot of fighters, it's going to take a long time because these people are embedded, deeply embedded. Those that don't want to be there are already in their new locations in Yemen and in Libya. If you get my point.
I appreciate the education as always. And if people want to follow you, it's simply Google Micah Halpern is the best way to go. MICAHHALPERN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
She's playing chicken. Look, Putin, from everything I see, has no respect for this person.
Well, that's because he'd rather have a puppet as president of the United States.
No puppet.
And it's pretty clear.
You're the puppet.
I'm not a puppet. You're a puppet. You're the puppet. You're totally a puppet. It's 7:25, and Rick Pearson's standing by to join us. Pat Brady's here as well. Pat, where do you work? I forget.
Next Generation Strategies. Thank you.
All right, and let's go to Rick Pearson, finance political writer at America, Chicago Tribune, chicagotribune.com, television, radio, Sunday Spin host. You got a guest this weekend?
Yes, I do. I've got... Bloomberg News political reporter John McCormick is joining us, as well as Democratic State Senator Daniel Biss. He's the one who is behind these ads you're seeing on TV that are trying to link Donald Trump to Bruce Rauner.
We've had so much already said about last night and all the flashpoint moments. 70% of last night from Trump, I think, was as good as he gets. 30% was, again, just off the rails. Here's a moment, though, that kind of got buried underneath. Trump talking about the accusations of the women and what he said or didn't say to his wife, Melania?
I would say the only way, because those stories are all totally false. I have to say that. And I didn't even apologize to my wife, who's sitting right here, because I didn't do anything.
There you go. And I don't remember it that way. Here's Melania with Anderson Cooper.
He apologized. I accept his apology. I hope the American people will accept it well.
I'm thinking, you kill it. I'm thinking that they don't talk that much anyway. But Rick, just a direct contradiction.
He can't help himself. I mean, he literally can't help himself. You know, the first half hour, I thought he laid out in a very calm, pragmatic way for him, you know, the talking points of his campaign. But, you know, then it's back to the Donald Trump of the campaign trail. And, I mean, yeah, we know all the big points, but you can't underestimate the whole idea of him refusing to accept the results of the election. That just says so much about, this is about Donald Trump, this isn't about the country.
Right, right. And that seems to be something that we've been trying to say for a year on the show, but this is not the time for me to go, told you. and again...
If you really want to know what I think, I'll just leave you in suspense. How about that?
No. Well, that's Chuck Todd, a half an hour ago, 45 minutes ago, brought that up. And in a reality show, this is the presidency of the United States. Pat's head's about to explode. Say hi to Rick.
Hey, Rick, how you doing?
Good morning, Pat.
Hey, what's this going to do, the apparent implosion, to our local races?
You know, I'm reading nationally about a lot of concern about how with that debate performance, how now it's all about the down ballot, and a lot of concern down ballot. House Republicans are trying to circle the wagons, get some of those Republicans who are in safe seats to give up some of their campaign money to help those that are placed in jeopardy by this. I think the real, you know, as we've kind of seen this evolve and we've kind of known the storyline, the real race now is about down ballot.
Did he do, and I asked both of you this, did he do enough damage last night, especially with that comment about not legitimizing the results of the election, that the House could be back in jeopardy? I mean, that's a lot of seats to make up.
It's a lot of seats to make up, but, you know, there's no telling about what aspect of voter turnout is going to be. You know, Trump for a long time has been countering that he's going to get a much greater turnout than anybody expected, and indeed, you know, we did see that in the Republican primaries, but also trying to play this game of how the election result is rigged kind of plays against him, and kind of depressing turnout suppressing turnout among his own supporters.
But the president and the Clinton team actually did the Republicans a big favor by describing Trump as not a Republican. So I think you can differentiate. There could be some ticket split with people not having a guilty conscience about it because he's not really perceived as a Republican.
But do you think that message gets across to the average Republican voter?
Well, you know, downstate, though, Rick, you have probably a view on this. Trump is still pretty popular. So we have some races down there, some House races, where he might actually turn out people, Democrats, on our side.
Yeah, there is no doubt that where Trump is popular in Illinois is downstate, obviously. Geography, the conservatives is much stronger in ideology downstate. But as we've talked about too, when you get to these downstate races, you know, people know the candidates a lot more in a personal way than they necessarily do up here in Chicago, where I bet most people couldn't even name their state representative, state legislator.
You know, one thing that they've done, and we talked about this on your Sunday, Rick, is the ground game has changed. It's not phone calls anymore. It's door knocks. And I think you can win a state rep race door knocking.
Well, absolutely. You know, that's all about the field work and organizing. And, you know, there again, that goes to that issue of the knowing the candidate, knowing the person personally, not just somebody that is necessarily somebody that they see in some TV ad running in Marion, Illinois.
Quick question, Rick. Give me a quick answer on this, too. I am unbelievably tired of the surrogates and the surrogate culture that's never been worse. And this is both sides, Clinton surrogates and his as well. When you sit down with a surrogate and you're getting the talking points that you knew ahead of time, how much of that is just networks filling 24-hour coverage versus a need to actually get a message from a candidate?
You know, that's really what it all is. I mean, debate coverage, when I was on the road, I never went to the spin room. You know, to me, it's what the candidates have to say. And, you know, as we saw about whether Trump would accept the results of the election or not, was being contradicted in the spin room by Reince Priebus and others. And it's like, you know, I'm sorry, this was the debate. This was the candidate. This was his time to talk to the American people. That's what the real story is. It's not what somebody else tries to spin in the spin room. And all of these surrogates, that, yeah, it's purely time fillers for all of the cable news networks.
Every time a surrogate speaks, common sense dies just a little more. Sunday morning, Sunday spin, 7 a.m., right?
7 to 9 a.m. on Sunday morning.
At Rep 30, all over your social media for Rick Pearson.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
He lost the Iowa caucus. He lost the Wisconsin primary. He said the Republican primary was rigged against him. Then Trump University gets sued for fraud and racketeering. He claims the court system and the federal judge is rigged against him. There was even a time when he didn't get an Emmy for his TV program 3 years in a row, and he started tweeting that the Emmys were rigged against
him. Should have gotten it.
He's still angry about the Emmy.
Is that the year Blago was on?
Yeah, I think so. I just think if, Pat, you go on global television and run off a list of, say, I don't know, 7 or 8 things you say I'm lying about, I'm not going to confirm the entire list by going, well, I should have gotten that one.
You know what? However, the Access Hollywood stuff came out perfectly, because the first thing that came out was the statement, idiotic statements he made. And then these women came out one after the other. Just so he said it, and we know what he said, you know what he thinks. And then all the allegations came out, which tie right back to the statement. So he there was no way out. It would just set up perfectly that he had no response.
But you missed the point last night where he said all those charges, Pat, they've been debunked.
Yeah, I think that's what he thinks. But I don't think
that was, you know, as good as Charlie was last night. Chris Wallace was last night. The one thing I really wish he'd followed up on was that specific point by saying, debunked by who? Right. Who debunked them? Where was the bunking? The debunking, I should say. We know where the bunking was in Don's head.
Yeah, it has not been debunked.
It's been debunked by anybody. He says they're not true because they're not true.
And it plays right into Hillary's hand of objectifying women and treating them poorly. And if they do this, I'm just going to lie about it. So to me, the thing is, as a Republican and anybody that was a Trump supporter or is a Trump supporter, you should be very angry with him for just not preparing. Because he had plenty of opportunities.
We got an
to
email.
Pin the Secretary Clinton's ears back, and he didn't do it.
Email from a woman. She's a Chicago public school teacher. She said, I just wanted to ask the moderator to please just ask Trump to cite a source of his information, some research, a document, actual numbers. He seems to be spouting out random generalizations and absolutes. It's exhausting. When my students do this, I call them out on it in front of the classroom. No one believes you if you can't back up your claims.
Yeah, he may need to be sent back to military school, which is where he was sent as a younger man. He had an opportunity last night with some very legitimate information, which he was able to successfully use in the first 20 minutes or so of the debate to just really score a significant win. And he let it go by because, again, everybody's out to get Don. Just ask him.
But to me, even, and I do think I agree with you, he did better, but the bar is so low for him. But to, as, maybe it's just because I'm a lawyer, but the opening 10 minutes when he was talking constitutional questions was embarrassing, that he could not articulate better the, you know, fundamental constitutional principles, the conservative beliefs. I thought he stumbled over a lot of that.
He didn't drool.
Well, I know, but that's about all he needed to do.
Hillary Clinton should feel pretty confident this morning. However, I would caution anyone who's too confident about this election. You still have to show up and vote whether you're for Trump or for Hillary and not assume that it's over just because we or somebody else tells you it is. You're not going to hear it on this show. It's not over until the votes are counted on November 9th. I, by the way, will accept the election results. Can you explain to folks why that's so important?
The hallmark of a democracy is a peaceful transition of power. If you've ever been to an inauguration, the thing that's most impressive, and I've seen a couple of them to me, was the fact that power gets turned over in the strongest country in the world and not a shot's fired. And it's been that way for 240 years. And I thought Secretary Clinton was very good in her answer and description of why that is so fundamentally wrong for a major party candidate not to accept election results. One of the best speeches I've ever seen was John McCain's concession speech, where he said, in a very hard-fought campaign, that my opponent is now my president, and that's the way it needs to be done. It's been done that way since the founding of the Republic. And Donald Trump, for some reason, either doesn't understand it, which I suspect is the case, or just wants to keep his reality TV show going.
Again, I think we all need to see Hamilton. Not that they have any problem selling tickets, but before the election, just to see how it was done back in the day and how people sacrificed themselves for country. I'm not saying we do that and have a duel, although...
Might be time for a duel.
Might be.
I would also remind people, before we go to the break here, Mary will do traffic, that there are two very clear examples of a peaceful transfer of power where it could have gone in the other direction. And one is Richard Nixon, one of the biggest sleazeballs to ever sit in power, not just here, but anywhere, who in 1960 knew, absolutely knew, that John Kennedy stole the election from him by his father's manipulations in Chicago and in Texas, and said the next day, we're not going to do a recount. The country doesn't need that. The country can't withstand that. We need to do the right thing, and he stepped aside. And then in 2000, Al Gore had every right to ask for a full Florida recount and said the country's been through enough. George Bush is the president.
Yeah, country first seems to be lost in this campaign. I'm hoping we've got 19 more days of the Trump show that we can get back to actually working on the country's problems. And there's a lot going on right now. They're talking maybe a huge market correction after the election. The economy's still limping along. The Fed Reserve holding interest rates at zero can't do that forever. And on the global scene, there's a lot of bad stuff happening right now, particularly China and Russia.
The local side of this is very important. We come back. I want to talk to you about Mark Kirk and Tammy Duckworth. Congress affects your life more than the presidency does every single day. Congress takes care of all the nuancy things, all the laws we abide by. We'll talk about this major Senate race coming up in a second and whether Pat Brady thinks...
Republican Senator Mark Kirk from Illinois, who was the first senator to actually unendorse Mr. Trump. So since you were the first, let me begin there. Unendorsing Trump, but not endorsing Clinton, correct? So who will you be voting for, or who will you be writing in?
In my case, I'd be writing in General Colin Powell, that I think would be the best person.
Mitt Romney in town yesterday, doing a fundraiser and a supportive lunch for Senator Mark Kirk. You were there, right? Pat Brady?
Yeah, I got to tell you, Governor Romney looked like $1 million, and he was...
Oh, I thought Romney was there. It was Rauner?
No, Governor Romney. Oh, I'm
Governor
sorry,
Romney was there.
Romney, yeah.
Yeah, okay, good.
He looked great, sounded great, and Senator Kirk did a great job.
He looks like he smells terrific. Does Governor Romney smell terrific?
In fact, I said that to him. Since you smell good for a Republican nominee.
Mitt Romney has said nice things about Mark Kirk. You've said nice things about Mark Kirk. What's the state of the race?
Right. He said, Senator Kirk said yesterday, it's within two or three points. But it's going to be a tough race. But to me, in this race, first of all, a couple of things. Senator Kirk always is supposed to lose, and he always ends up winning. But I haven't seen a real good reason not to reelect him. He's been a great senator for the state of Illinois. He's a social moderate, national security and fiscal hawk. Really worked across the aisle very well.
Yeah.
So he's a guy that
Senator Durbin have had a very good
relationship. Yeah, great relationship. He's made some great appointments and been a great public servant. So I don't see why you would not vote for him. And to me, as a Republican, and I think we're going to have President Clinton, and we need a check on Hillary Clinton in the White House because we don't want – she's got a very left-leaning United States Senate driven by Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders. I don't think that's where the country is, and I think it's important that we have a balance in Congress.
And I like Tammy Duckworth as a person, and I think her military record deserves every bit of the respect that you would give someone who went through what she's gone through. And I think she's got the ability to, at some point, be ready for the Senate. I don't think a very brief stop in the House of Representatives makes you ready for the Senate. And Kirk has been there. He has the experience. And based on that, I like them both, but based on that, I agree with you. I think Senator Kirk ought to be reelected, but man, Republicans better show up if they're going to do that, because I think she's got a significant lead.
Yeah, I think it's closer than that. But the good thing is, again, this year is we have a party and a governor who's put a lot of resources into the state party apparatus to get out the vote. As you talk about all the time, people got to get out to vote, but it's partly the responsibility of the campaigns to get their people to the polls. So I think that helps him. But the Senate is important. And the one thing that surprised me in this campaign, we talked about months ago, is there's really been a separation nationally from Trump. Kelly Ayotte, Pat Toomey, Ron Johnson have actually kept those races close, so it may not be the bloodbath that people are talking about. And we are not going to lose the House of Representatives. We're going to lose some seats, but we're not going to lose the whole thing.
And as far as the Senate goes, you think that's what? That's still up in the air? Because you think people who are not going to vote for Trump will not vote Republican anyway, or vice versa?
Ticket splitting happens all the time in Illinois. I'm not sure if it happens other places, but the polls I've seen, the races that are really critical are still fairly close. But the scary thing is in a place like Pennsylvania, in the suburbs, similar to the suburbs of Chicago, Trump gets beat with suburban women by 43 percentage points. That is a number that is bad beyond belief.
Yeah,
I don't think
night,
he helped himself last night.
No. Calling Hillary Clinton a nasty woman.
That is a buzzword.
Oh.
Yeah.
It's awful.
It's unbelievable.
Steve, I've been a guy a long time, and I know that nasty is not a word you say.
Most of your life.
Most of my life. Yeah, yeah, it's not a word you use when talking
to
insulting.
A female. It's beyond insulting.
One bad hombre as well is not being exactly received with warmth and love from the Hispanic community.
When you said that, I cannot believe he just said that.
Yeah.
In front of 200 million people.
He was just like this close to going, "Batches? We don't need no stinking batches."
Well, the good news is it can't get any worse, so it has to get better. So we're hoping.
You said that about 9 months ago.
Can't get any worse. 3 weeks to go.
Yeah, can't get any worse.
Seems like a risky statement to me.
Well, I do think there's some members of the Republican National Committee, not the chairman, Reince Priebus, who's done a great job, but some of the committee members in the statements they've made about buying into this conspiracy theory, they all need to go.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
I'm past patiently waiting. I'm passionately smashing every expectation. Every action's an act of creation. I'm laughing in the face of casualties of sorrow. For the first time, I'm thinking past tomorrow.
When I am not going to win my shot.
Well, it's not Millard. John DeCosta and I are producing a musical set to the life of Millard Fillmore. This is Hamilton. And last night, Andrea Darlis was at Hamilton, a star-studded occasion. Dave, you've seen it as well.
I have seen it.
Mary, where are our tickets?
I know, really.
I'll take you, Mary.
Go. Oh, let's go.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Wait a minute. It starts late, and it's in the city. You guys will come back for this?
Oh, we'll see this, sure.
Oh, yeah. It was unbelievable. It was so good. It probably was the best musical I've ever seen.
Really?
Hands down.
Don't you think I would put it right up there.
With what?
with
like Les Mis or
better
than Les Mis.
Yeah. I mean,
Les Mis is a great musical. It makes me it's hard to watch.
Yeah, it's very sad.
This was just and truly because I thought, you know how there was so much hype with Book of Mormon. I thought there's so much hype with this. Really, come on, does it really live up to it? And it's America. It's history. Which is a challenge in itself as well, because we all know, you know, many of us fell asleep in history class. It's for me, I love it, you know, learning about the past. But doing it to rap and hip hop and R&B, it was just, I was blown away.
What was the age of the crowd?
Oh, all ages. There was a little girl behind me, maybe 12 years old, and there was a lady a couple rows in front of me with a walker. So,
now the older folks, did they have trouble keeping up with the lyrics?
No, I was good. I was okay.
Yeah. You know, beat you to it. My mom saw it a couple weeks ago, and I thought she was a good litmus test because she loved. You know, she's not a big rap fan.
She's a big Kid Rock
R&B. Oh, she does like Kid Rock, a little bit, yeah, and then the heavy metal. But she loved it. I was blown away by how great it was.
And you agree with
it? Absolutely. And I think even if maybe you look at it and think, okay, hip hop isn't really what I'm into, I think you'll be surprised because it doesn't really have the feel of.
Nobody comes out with a clock hanger on a chain around their neck.
And truly, you know how and normally to sit there for 2.5-3 hours, the intermission came so quickly. I said, "Oh my gosh!" And it was an hour and a half, almost 2 hours into it. Is how fast this goes. It's nonstop, and you learn so much.
How long is the show?
I'd say almost 3 hours.
Yeah, it ended, I think, when the night I saw it, it ended about 10:20. I think it starts at 7:30. There's an intermission.
Ours started at 6, so we ended about, after a little.
Why did you have a 6 o'clock show?
It was the press night. It was the opening night, the official opening night.
Well, you know, as you know, one of the main reasons you get into show business is free tickets. So where's my free tickets for the show?
Well, you'll have to. We'll have the cast on.
Oh, I'll
we'll
be
have
happily.
Some members of the cast.
Oh, please.
On.
I don't do that kind of payola.
Oh, come on. Let's do it.
All right, I will.
Okay.
At 8:15, you had an Uber experience last night.
Oh, my gosh.
Anytime we can recognize people for doing the right thing. What did this guy do?
This guy was awesome. Well, I think Uber's great. Ross Cochran got me onto Uber about a year and a half, 2 years ago.
Yeah,
I used it in Cleveland at the convention. I used it in Philadelphia at the convention.
Seems to be catching on.
I've always had great experiences, but last night was unbelievable. My friend who I went to the theater with doesn't use credit cards. She just carries cash in her purse. And she had opened up her purse to get her cell phone and a large amount of cash. It was about $100 in 20s and different bills fell onto the Uber seat. She got back and said, "Oh my gosh, can you call the Uber guy? I think I dropped all my money in the Uber in the back seat." I said, "There's no way. I mean, come on." So I called the Uber. I got in touch with the driver through Uber. You have to go through the app and request the number and say, "I lost something." He called back. He said, "You know what? There's somebody in the back. We'll look for you." He had picked up another fare. He said, "We'll look for you." He called me back about 10 minutes later. He said, "No, they couldn't find anything, but hold on, let me pull over." And I thought, you know, of course, probably the next fare took it. I mean, if you see $100 laying there, you probably take it. I wouldn't, of course, neither would you. But he called me back. He said, "I stopped the car. I looked under the seat. I found the cash. Was it $76? You know, it was the exact amount. He drove it all the way back. He had dropped his last fare off on the north side, drove the money all the way back.
Well, that's really cool.
How cool is that?
That's very
cool. Then, you know, I gave him a nice reward, you know, for doing that.
Sure.
And
did you give him $76?
No. I gave him a good amount and 20. And
yeah, nice.
He said, no, I can't. I said, "Yes, you can and you will. So thank you so much for doing that."
But he's raised right.
Above and beyond.
Well,
just such
nice.
A nice man.
Do you remember his name?
Yeah, I could get it.
Yeah, get his name. We'll say it on there.
Okay.
Or at least his first name if he doesn't want to give up his whole name.
And he let me watch the end of the debate, too, in the back seat.
Yeah, and continuing with the "Aren't You Guys Lucky? Yes, We Are Blessed" segment, thanks to Vince Pellegrino from the Western Golf Association, and please support the Evans Scholarship Program anywhere you can. Yesterday, thanks to Dwight Eckenberg, the host at Exmoor, and his buddy Mike from Olympia Fields, is a really good player. Dwight's very funny. Mike's a really good player. I was the hanger-on. And Vince is a good stick. But anyway, we're all there for the 2018 Constellation Senior Players Championship kickoff. And spent some time last night there with Jeff Sluman.
Oh, cool.
And, you know, Jeff, you can see Jeff at any Chicago sporting event anytime. But Jeff Sluman and I reconnected, so Jeff will be on the show sooner than later. And it's going to be exciting. Exmoor. Man, I'd never played Exmoor. What a great golf course.
Oh, nice.
Love that golf course.
You had a nice Donald day Russ for golf it, too. Course.
Tremendous. So thank you to Dwight, and thank you to everybody at Exmoor, and especially to Vince and the Western Golf Association folks. 818, back with your traffic. Well, it's traffic now, as a matter of fact, and then we're back with more show. Tim Allen will be live in studio later on 720 WGN.
And my driver's name was Shafiq.
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 Well done, Shafiq. .823 now. Just real quickly, let's go over the other two big events that happened before we get back to some debate zone. Tonight is Bears-Packers. Dave, will you watch it?
I will be watching. I will be trying to watch both the Bears
percentage-wise, how much Cubs, how much Bears-Packers?
I'm just going to be clicking back and forth.
I'm going to need a number.
It all depends on the timing. Because if you get...
I like to think of you as watching, say, 80% Cubs, 20% Bears-Packers.
That's probably what it's going
to
be.
I'll go the other way to cover your non-watching of the football. 80-20, I'll go the other way. 20% Cubs, 80% Bears-Packers. Because tonight's not an elimination game for the NLCS.
Okay. Oh, but it's close. I mean, it's...
Oh, it's an elimination game for the Bears tonight. The Bears lose for the Packers tonight, the franchise will be thrown out of the National Football League.
No, that's not true.
Yeah. I'm going to go 90-10.
90-10 Cubs.
Okay. I mean, if you time it right, and here's the other thing, you could DVR one, and then during commercial breaks.
I hate DVRing sports.
I do, too.
There's no way not to know the results, and it's completely anticlimactic.
There is. I mean, I was traveling two Sundays ago. I DVR'd the Bears game, Bears-Colts game. I got off the plane, got all the way home without knowing the outcome of the game.
So you had to actually take a flight to not know.
With
spotty Wi-Fi connection in midair.
I was the person behind me mentioned the score out loud. I didn't hear it. My wife did, but she knew not to tell me.
Didn't you look at your phone?
I didn't look at my phone.
I put
blinders on walking through the terminal I couldn't see the TVs.
Cubs pitch who tonight?
Cubs will pitch John Lester.
Yes.
Yeah, I've heard of him. He's done okay. And who do the Dodgers have?
The Dodgers have Kenta Maeda.
Who do they really have?
Kenta Maeda. Now, they could have gone to Kershaw, but Kershaw will pitch Saturday in game six.
Who's Kenta Maeda?
He's a guy that, he's been, he won 16 games for him this year.
Really?
But.
I missed all 16.
He has not been good in the playoffs.
Okay.
And Lester has been very good.
You sure you're pronouncing that right? Kenta Maeda?
Kenta Maeda. But here's the thing. Cubs worry about facing Kershaw. The Dodgers have to be shaking at the thought of facing John Lester tonight.
You know Kenta Maeda. He's a former teammate of Matt Merton.
No, actually, that didn't ring a bell for me. Here's a couple of clips from last night's debate. Donald Trump made a lot of news last night, kids. He was, in my view, 70% pretty good for Trump. 30% really, really not good at all. Here's the biggest problem. Donald Trump on when the election results go final. Listen.
Are you saying you're not prepared now to commit to that principle?
What I'm saying is that I will tell you at the time. I'll keep you in suspense.
Well,
okay?
Chris, let me respond to that because that's horrifying.
And it is horrifying. And she's right about that because there is more than a tradition. It is an unwritten rule that cannot be broken, that the losing party in an election accepts the results to unify the two parties to move forward as a nation. The fact that Trump doesn't get it is, frankly, just kind of sad. Trump also has made some news this morning for a statement that he made in regards to immigration. Listen.
We cannot give amnesty. Now, I want to build the wall. We need the wall. The Border Patrol, ICE, they all want the wall. We stop the drugs. We shore up the border. One of my first acts will be to get all of the drug lords, all of the bad ones. We have some bad, bad people in this country that have to go out. We're going to get them out. We're going to secure the border. And once the border is secured, at a later date, we'll make a determination as to the rest. But we have some bad hombres here, and we're going to get them out. But we have some bad hombres here, and we're going to get them out.
Later on, he referenced, and I'm not kidding, General George Patton, so Trump thinks he's living in a 50s movie. Hombre, definition, a man, especially one of a particular type, can be taken by Hispanic cultures as an insult. Good move, Don. well-researched as always. And then another moment for the Trumpster last night when he and Hillary Clinton got into it. Clinton was really trying hard to bait him, and he took the bait every single time. How about the puppet moment?
She's playing chicken. Look, Putin, from everything I see, has no respect for this person.
Well, that's because he'd rather have a puppet as president of the United States.
No puppet.
And it's pretty clear.
You're the puppet.
It's pretty clear you won't admit
I'm not a puppet. You're a puppet.
You're a puppet.
You're a puppet, Dave. Everybody knows you're a puppet.
I know I am, but what are you?
I'm not a puppet.
Your mom's a puppet.
You're a Russian puppet named Boris. That's who you are. You puppet.
Come on,
you.
That was didn't you guys go ding 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 ding?
You know what I'd like to have? You know what I'd like to have? I'd like to have a bad hombre puppet. Be cool to have a bad hombre puppet. So you know what I do the night of the election? Here's what I want. The night of the election, when the election results are complete, I'm going to do a bad hombre puppet show.
Oh,
and I'm going to have a bad hombre puppet on my hand behind a podium, and I'm going to put it up on the microphone and accept the results of the election. 8:29, back with the big story next on 720 WGN.
Ryan Dempster.
There's a 1-1 to Freeman. Oh, he caught it! Right into the palm of Dempster's glove. Ooh, that is a little smile there from Dempster.
What would Harry say right now about this win?
Well, I got to tell you, there's a lot of champagne in here. I haven't seen this much champagne since my wedding. We had a party just like this. It was phenomenal. Go, Cubs!
That was outstanding.
8:40 live from L.A. where he's rooming with Kevin Powell. Oh, he's probably got his own room, don't you think?
I would think so, yeah.
Ryan Dempster. How much fun was last night, Demps?
Yeah, that was a better result, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Kind of what we're looking for, so.
It seems to me that scoring runs is key.
Hey, there are some beautiful insight provided. no, you know what? It was good. I mean, I understand that people were, you know, talking about it and the fact that we weren't scoring any runs, but it wasn't like we weren't scoring runs off of Joe Blow or, you know, this guy or that guy. We weren't scoring runs off of Clayton Kershaw and Rich Hill, two guys who, guess what, they weren't giving up any runs to anybody else all year either. So they pitched really well in games 2 and 3, and we did what we were supposed to do and bounced back. And the guys went out and just laid it on them last night and kind of set it up for a good matchup tonight.
How come Rich Hill has not been a bigger deal in baseball? Because what he had the other night is – and pardon the comparison, because he's not Greg Maddux, but Maddux had the ability to throw 84-mile-an-hour fastballs and have a Hall of Fame career because he could go, here's a nickel, hit the nickel, and just could spot those pitches, right? I mean, why isn't Rich Hill a bigger star?
Well, it's quite the story. If you look at where he came from starting with the Cubs and being a really good pitcher and I still remember it happening. I remember when he was sitting there, I think he was like 6-1 or something like that with a 2.2 ERA. And he was the only guys who randomly got on first base, would try and steal. And a few of them would steal second base, you know, and he gave up a bunch of stolen bases in a row. And Lou said to him, son, if you're not going to be able to hold runners, you're never going to pitch in the big leagues. And so he started slide stepping. And then next thing you know, his timing was off, his command was off, and it kind of just – it took his career down another route and
wow.
He struggled. Next thing you know, he's dropped down left-handed reliever. And I remember getting a phone call from him last year, and he sat there and said, hey, I think I'm going to go start in the independent league again. I said, go for it, man, and good luck and have fun and you do what you did before. And next thing you know, I'm watching TV and I see this thing on the bottom says Rich Hill 10 Ks. I'm like, there's another Rich Hill, and he's up in the big leagues, and you know, so hats off to him. You know, I hope we don't see him again. I hope, you know, that's not the case, but if we do, we'll be ready for him. And he's had a great year, and that curveball's nasty, but if we have to face him again, we'll find a way to beat him.
That curve, is it a slurve or is it a straight curve? Because that sucker's got some movement on it.
Yeah, no, it's a traditional curveball, a 12-6 curveball, and he's got some good bite on it, and he threw well against us. We just missed a few, but fortunately, he didn't pitch last night, and we went out there and scored a bunch of runs, so that was good.
And a couple of guys that had to break out of their slumps broke out of their slumps. Let's go live to Dave in his chair. Dave, who hit last night?
Well, a lot of guys hit, but the key guys were Rizzo and Russell. I mean, they were 3 for 50 in the postseason, and Anthony Rizzo, who struck out his first two times up last night, then he hits a home run, then he gets a big two-run single, and Dempsey, it just seems like so much of it is confidence. I mean, these guys have been working hard to snap out of this. There's no question they knew they weren't hitting, you know, and now they're hearing about it on top of that. But I guess there has to be something that just tells them internally it's going to be okay. I've been hitting all year, and I'm going to figure this out.
100%. It's just like when I don't know what it's like to be a hitter like that, you know, obviously, but I'm around it, and I've seen it. And when the guys get into slumps like that, or not even slumps, just, you know, things aren't falling in. You know, he was having some better at-bats. His first at-bat, he fouled off a bunch of pitches. He put together a strong at-bat, you know, and all of a sudden, boom, you don't get a hit. And then you go out there again and you put together, you miss a couple pitches, you pull one just foul, you do this, you do that, you don't get a hit. And then it keeps happening and happening. And then when you do square the ball up, it lines out to somebody. You hit a home run and it's just a little bit foul. And I think, you know, it can get in your dome a little bit. It can get in there. Whether you want to just stay to the process. Oh, I just keep doing what I'm doing, and they'll fall. And now all of a sudden they do fall and you get a few of those hits, and how huge that was for him to get a few hits and a big humongous home run, especially after, you know, you look at the at-bat, he thought he walked, and then he comes back and hits a big home run. So, you know, just a great night for both those guys, because you're right, you get those guys going and it's a different story, and that can just lead into the next game and the next game and proving some confidence in the middle of that lineup where we need those guys driving in runs. And you hit the nail on the head. It hasn't been for lack of effort. They've had to face some tough pitching, but you know, that those are the kind of things that can kind of kickstart a run of a bunch of hits and a hot streak at the plate.
I got to say something too about Wilson Contreras, because he's the guy who got it going. Well, Zobrist got it going with a bunt, but when they really needed somebody to come through with a base hit with guys on base, Contreras did it. And by that point in the game, he had already been involved in two key defensive plays, picking off the runner at second base in the first inning, then the play on Gonzalez at the plate, and whether or not he was safe or out, I mean, he was ruled out. That's what it ended up with. And, I mean, for a guy in the spotlight, in that situation, who's a rookie, to step up, get a big hit, make big plays, I mean, it's pretty amazing, isn't it, for him to show what he's shown at this point?
You know what, man? He has done such a great job of learning on the fly, and I think, you know, hats off to Theo and Jed to make that decision to bring him up when they did, to give him that experience, because knowing that he might be thrust into a role like this, and that's the honest truth. I remember having the discussion with Theo about that. And, you know, they wanted to give him the opportunity to learn from Rossi and Miggy about how to go out there and control a game and call a game, and things are going to get going fast. And he plays with a lot of high energy out there. He brings a different aspect to the lineup, and he proved it last night. You know, that was a huge back pick at second base, and then the huge hit, and just neutralizes the running game because his arm's so sharp. And he just did a tremendous job last night, like you said, just getting things kind of being a little bit of a spark plug out there. I want to go back to something you said. I just thought it was awesome. Our four-hole hitter, our cleanup guy, bunted for a base hit.
How about that?
Started that whole rally.
And, yeah, and
it shows you some. I was just going to say, it shows you sometimes in the playoffs, this isn't about stats. It's not about what kind of numbers you can put up individually. It's about what you can do as a team. It doesn't matter where you're batting in the lineup. You know, sometimes I see there'll be this huge shift and guys, you know, have a chance to maybe push a bunt over that way, and guys don't do it. And you can see what just a little something like that did for our team to be able to put a spark in there, get a guy on base, and next thing you know, boom, a whole bunch of runs score. So incredible stuff.
Yeah, and I may be wrong about this, but I would believe, because of Madden's respect for the game and his ability to understand the game at a different level, that at some point he had that team, or the other coaches had that team, working on bunts. Because how many times have we seen guys in the last 10 years particularly who can't get a bunt down when they absolutely have to? And like you said, to have the four-hole hitter do it, tremendous.
Yeah, I mean, it just shows you too how incredible of a teammate that Ben Zobrist is. I mean, he it's something he takes pride in all aspects of his game. He can play left field, right field, second base. He'll play shortstop if you need it. He'll do anything that the team asks. And you know, when he came over here and getting a chance to talk with him in spring training and be around him, you just see that that's all that matters to him is what can I do today to help our team win a ball game? What can I do as an individual to help my entire team win a ball game? And he brings that approach, and it feeds off all the other guys, feed off that, and they see that. And you put yourself and you sacrifice yourself sometimes and do what you have to do to help win a ball game for the ball club, and good things happen. And you saw it last night, case in point with leadoff putt. Like
Dems,
that.
Another really cool moment last night, I felt as a huge baseball fan, was watching Rizzo and Hernandez on that sportsmanlike comment where he starts to apologize for giving him a hard time by calling, I think it was a strike on an earlier pitch. And just the back and forth for us at home to see that. Does that happen more than you think?
Yeah, you know what it
more
does.
More than we
I think.
Think.
You know, yeah, I think it does because you don't see it a lot because, you know, for whatever reason, the playoffs things are more magnified, so maybe they focused in on that. And it was, you know, sometimes it's like, hey, I've been there with umpires before. You think something's a strike or you think something's a ball, and you go in and you look at it, and you're like, yeah, you know what? You know, you're working hard back here too. Like, they're not robots. As much as everybody sometimes would like them to be, umpires are going to either miss calls or they're going to get calls. And you're not, as a hitter, you might think it's a strike, or you might think it's a ball, and you'll find out it's not. Hey, that was a good pitch, and it creates a good camaraderie. That's how the game used to be. Umpires and players used to talk all the time, and for whatever reason, it doesn't happen as much anymore. And I think it's really awesome to see when guys kind of move past those things and provides, I don't know, for kind of good insight, a different key or a different story to a game that you might not necessarily see.
Ryan Dempsey, you had any fun in L.A.?
I have. I've had a really good time. So
what have you been doing?
I had a chance to go play some golf with
what?
My good friend Derek Lee yesterday. I haven't seen D. Lee in a long time. So we went out to the old Sherwood Forest, went to Sherwood Country Club, and where Derek's a member at, and had a nice time, and get a chance to catch up with a few people out here. And, yeah, we're just enjoying some ball games.
How's he doing? Is he healthy?
Yeah, he looks like – are you kidding me? He looks like he plays starting tight end somewhere or point guard in the NBA or still man first base and be an MVP of the league. So he's in phenomenal shape, looking great, raising four kids with his wife. So he's doing wonderful.
Ryan, probably reminded you a lot of me, I guess, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. Same body type.
Exactly.
Two of you guys.
All right, let's look at this matchup tonight. I think if you're the Cubs, you have to feel really good about Lester against Maeda in this one.
I think if you're the Cubs or if you're any team, you feel really good about having John Lester. Oh,
that's true.
On the mound in these situations. This isn't the first, won't be the last. He's pitched in the biggest ball games there are, and the one thing about him is he'll be prepared and ready. So you just got to go out there and try and feed off of what happened last night, carry it into tonight, and go out there and try and win another ball game.
It's the Cubs and the Dodgers, and the Cubs go up 3-2. Look, the bottom line is they're going to clinch their run back to the World Series, first time since 1945, at Wrigley Field. It's just a matter of when. See how cocky I'm getting about this? and that's the way it should be. Demps, thanks. Have fun today, man.
Absolutely, guys. You bet. We'll talk to you next week.
There you go.
Thanks.
Ryan Dempster from your Chicago Cubs.
The Steve Cochran Show.
I used to be able to throw a pigskin a quarter mile.
The Wang Dang Doodle.
Are you serious?
Yep. It's happening again.
Sandberg's here. Lovely, talented, devoted wife of Pat Boyle, Comcast Sportsnet. And have you considered changing your name to Mary Sandberg Boyle, Comcast Sportsnet?
I was thinking of maybe Mary Sandberg Boyle, CSN.
Well, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
That should be long for the back of a jersey.
Ooh,
too long. Yeah.
Are all the monogram sweaters that you have Pat wear where he ties them around his neck, do they all have CSN on them?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
I've been calling her Mary Boyle lately.
Well, you do that.
I am Mary Boyle, but I'm also Mary Sandberg Boyle.
You're Sandberg on this show. All right, let's go to the captain on the seventh floor. She's the captain now.
Can I just tell you, we've got one little slight problem with the Wang Dang Doodle.
What's that?
Well, my paperwork from the Do Care picks is not around somehow.
Oh, so we could pick again.
Hold on a second.
So this would qualify under the ding.
Yeah.
Anyway, hold on a second.
Yes, ding.
Are you saying we need to repick?
Well, oh, I mean, I could go
because
back.
Because we could repick right now instead of doing your team's picks, Mary.
Let's do that. Let's do that.
Well, or let us go. I can go back and listen to the file and see the picks.
That's a good idea.
I'm declaring a mistrial.
Oh, no.
Hey, I say.
Mary, you're supposed to be on my team.
I know, you know what? Let's just pick again.
No, we're not picking again.
No. I've gotten through 6 weeks of keeping all the paperwork, but I don't know what happened.
So, in other words, I could pick and nobody would know if that had already been picked yet.
How do you think that hasn't happened already?
I crossed off the people who were picked.
Look at that,
Mary. I know.
Who's going first?
It's supposed to be me.
All right, go ahead.
Can I pick Drew Brees or Mary?
Yes.
Okay. I'm going to pick Drew Brees.
And a game?
Can I pick? I'm going to pick the Saints.
Yeah, that one's open.
Okay,
I believe.
And I'm going to say 27-21.
I'll make an exception this week that you can pick a game that's been picked if it's done accidentally. Second pick.
Grzanich.
All right, I'm going to go with Russell Wilson.
I know he's not.
You don't even know who that is.
Right, I know.
He's the Seahawks quarterback.
Who is giving you this information?
I picked this completely on my own.
Oh, stop it.
Ryan?
No.
Yeah, Ryan Burrow.
No. Ryan told me he was in his fantasy quarterback. It was his fantasy quarterback, but that's it. He didn't
know what that means.
We don't
know what a fantasy quarterback is?
I don't get into his personal life.
That's funny.
What score are you picking?
I'm going to do Seahawks over the Cardinals 23-10.
Excellent.
Is that good?
Next!
Bennett, weeknight.
I am picking Blake Bortles.
Oh, yes.
Hold on a second.
Who?
Yeah. What?
Is he playing?
He's open. He's open, yeah.
Okay. Thanks,
well, of course he's open.
Well,
who would
sure.
pick him?
What? I did.
Why are you picking Blake Bortles?
For didn't multiple reasons.
Didn't he beat the Bears?
He doesn't care.
That reason. They beat the
probably...
Bears.
Wow.
He's got the greatest letter in all the alphabet and two sides of his name, B, Blake Bortles.
You have an opportunity to get less than 2 points
uh-oh,
this week.
Uh-oh,
and he's an
game.
Underdog. The game is the Jaguars and Oakland. The Jaguars are going to beat Oakland 14-3.
14-3.
Sounds okay. Like a barn burner. Okay. Right. Captain Mary.
Oh, it's fine. Didn't anybody pick Brady?
Yeah, Brady was picked.
He's picked.
No, he wasn't. I believe he was not picked.
I thought you picked him, didn't you?
I picked Aaron Rodgers.
Oh, yeah.
No, that he's
somebody
on the board.
Somebody picked Matt Ryan.
He's on the board. Take
yeah,
him.
Your
I took Ryan.
Brady.
Yeah.
Somebody picked Dalton and Derek Carr. So okay. I'm going with Tom Brady.
Okay. And your game?
I think the Lions and the Washington Redskins have not been picked, so I'll go with them. 38-28.
38-28. All right.
You've been listening to
Riveting.
The Losers.
Hey. I got Tom Brady's number one quarterback ranked.
I think
this
we got a good team
and
here,
nobody
guys.
Picked good, him. Good. And I got him.
The great Lydian for news.
Yes. Oh.
Grzanich says, ready, Brick.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
913. Steve Cochran, final hour of the program. Tim Allen later. Bill Geiger right now. Bill Geiger from Geiger Wealth Management. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, sir. How are you?
Nice to meet your wife. You're over your skis. I hope you don't screw this up.
Hope not.
Yeah, there you go. All right, let's talk about retirement because that's your specialty. That's what you do every day. How do I know I've got enough money to do it?
It's not really about asset size. It's about income.
I want you to write that down, Andre. It's not about the size of your assets.
Good.
It's yes. about,
I hope not. It's That's about, always a problem for me.
It's about the income. Because when you retire, what makes the world turn is how much income you have coming in each month, not how much assets you have in your portfolio.
So should I get a job as a greeter at Walmart at that point? Or?
Well, if you don't do things right,
yeah.
those folks aren't there because they like people.
Well,
they're there because they haven't done some things right in planning for retirement.
How old is the average person that comes to you, and how old should they be? There's no 65 yeah. retirement no, anymore, no. right? It's whatever works for you.
People are generally late 50s, early 60s, 5 years or so away from retirement and kind of wondering about whether they're doing everything right, whether they're heading the right direction, that sort of thing.
What if you're 50 years old and you haven't started saving yet?
Start saving.
Right,
that was easy. I have an MBA in finance. I can give you that
advice. Thanks. You nailed that.
Yeah.
What about 40 or 30? I mean, is there a great age to start saving? Or you say the minute you start making money.
As soon as you start making money, as soon as you get your first job. But when you really, really, really need to start getting serious is 5 to 10 years out from retirement. Because then if you have a big loss in your portfolio at that point, your whole retirement plans are going to change. You're going to work longer, or you're going to be one of those greeters for the Walmart.
Now, you're not saying be completely defensive, though, in your strategies. You're saying being strategic and smart?
Well, strategic and smart, and basically the big objective in retirement planning is to make sure that your retirement is as bulletproof as humanly possible.
Right.
That you can survive stuff, that if the market goes down at the end of the month, you're okay. You're not going to change.
Andrea, jump in.
Bill, question for you. A friend of mine has recently, well, she's in her 40s and has not really started saving, been in and out of jobs and things like that, brought up the question of an annuity. Is that something that you would still recommend? Is that kind of passe?
What is an annuity?
Annuity is a way to receive sustainable income for the rest of your life. And there's a lot of different flavors of it. Some you give your money to the insurance company to keep. Some it's your money from now until forever. But an annuity basically allows you to have a plan, have a private retirement, a private pension plan, if you will. So, you know, she could look into that, yes.
Okay. So you don't not like annuities. Annuities could work depending on the person.
They're a tool.
Okay.
And you use tools for different things.
We talk all the time about this offer that you make where if somebody's saved up $500,000, you're going to work up a full-blown financial plan for them. Some people go, whoa, 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 $500,000. $500,000 is the sum total of your assets, right?
No, it's the size of your portfolio.
Oh, well, explain the difference. Well, so my house wouldn't be in my portfolio.
Your house is not in your portfolio.
What about my cars?
Your cars are not in your portfolio.
TV?
If it's a big screen, high definition, 4HD, yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
The portfolio is
your stocks, bonds, 401k? Mutual funds, 401k, that's in there also, yes.
All right. So I don't think people realize after a career of working that they have saved a decent amount of money.
You know, 401ks are a remarkably great way to do that. They're actually a blessing and a curse. You sign up for them. They're a little painful the first couple of months. Next thing you know, you look up and you've got a whole bunch of money there. And your friend can do that too.
Right.
But the way that there are curses is when you get close to retirement and you really can't sustain any more big losses, there's only two flavors of ice cream in a 401k, risk and money markets. So you don't they get dangerous. Now, fortunately, when you're 59 and a half, you have the ability to continue at your job, continue contributing to your 401k, but you can move what's in your 401k outside of that into an IRA. In an IRA, you've got a lot more choices you can make.
You talk about risk a lot, and it's important to know how much risk you have. So, for instance, Andrea, if you were walking the plank, mm-hmm. when you got to the end of the plank, you would know the next step would be very risky.
True.
Geiger Wealth True. Management has a way to analyze your risk.
We do. We use a couple different tools. Very high-level Morningstar software analytical tool that actually allows us to take an X-ray of your portfolio, all your positions, all your accounts, and really talk intelligently about how much risk you have in your portfolio. And most people don't have a clue, not even a clue.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's probably almost universal, right, most people?
Yeah. And the really bad thing is they've told their advisor for years, look, I don't want any big losses. I'm a conservative kind of a couple, and we don't want any big losses this stage of our life. And we do a Morningstar, and sometimes we'll see that people are set up to lose 40 or 50% the next big downturn.
There's not a set number anymore, is there? It used to be, well, I'm going to retire at 65 with $1 million or whatever your site was set on. That you can't really say that anymore, right? Because people are working longer or maybe retiring earlier, depending on what their situation might be. And
that's
the economy,
correct.
Too.
That's correct. But it all comes back to income. When you retire, and Steve, we talked about this before, retirement is like 25 to 30 years of unemployment. You stop working, the checks stop too, right? That sounds a whole lot like unemployment.
Yeah.
Well, when
I think it's a great way. You brought it up a long time ago, but I think it's a great way for people to wrap their head around it.
Yeah. And so if there's no more paychecks, how are you going to pay your bills every month?
Borrow it from you.
Borrow it from me.
I was going to say borrow it from you.
I think borrow it from Steve.
That's what I'm borrowing from.
He's got
from.
The big money at this table.
It's important for people to know their risk. It's important for people to know what they're doing. But you don't have to feel badly if you don't. That's why you go get your oil changed with the oil change guy. That's why if you need surgery, you go to a surgeon. You are an expert in your field. You do this every day. That's why people should make an appointment with you. So before we run out of time, what do you want people to know?
Before we run out of time, I'd like to do something special for the listeners this morning, Steve. For the next five callers who call in that have at least $500,000 in their portfolio, I'm going to sit down with them personally and help them put together a full-blown financial plan, a full-blown retirement plan on a complimentary basis.
What does it include? What's in the plan? It's
going to include an in-depth analysis of where you're at right now.
Okay.
So you know how much risk you have. You know how much income you should be able to expect. You know what kind of growth you should be able to get. And then we look at where you're at right now, and we compare it to maybe sort of where you should be 5 years out or 10 years out from retirement. And then we talk about how do we get those two things aligned. That's the big deal.
Yeah, and you can't do that until you sit down and run those numbers, right?
You really need to understand where you're at first.
All right.
And it's a little tough to do on your own.
Next five callers, what's the number?
I'm going to let you...
800-681-2498. Why don't we go with that one?
That's good. That'll work.
800-681-2498. I would also encourage people to go to your website, just as a general rule of thumb, you know, poke around there a little bit and then call and make your own appointment.
That's true.
Yeah, GeigerWealthManagement.com. 800-681-2498. Next five callers, $500,000 or more, save for retirement. He'll help you make sure that $500,000, to the best of your mutual abilities, stays and grows and makes more.
Amen.
All right. Nice to see you as always.
Nice to see you,
much
sir.
Nicer to meet your wife.
That's true.
Yeah.
I felt the same way.
921. We're back with more in a moment on 720 WGN.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show. 720 WGN.
925. Tim Allen live in studio, scheduled to appear in the next few minutes. There's a number of websites that have gone graph happy, and frankly, a lot of them are a waste of time. But I found this one entertaining. It's the most Googled how-to question for each state in the nation.
Oh, that's interesting.
How to do this, how to do that. What do you think Illinois is? What's the most Googled how-to question in Illinois?
How to learn about Abraham Lincoln.
That's close. It's how to sell Beanie Babies.
What?
The single most Googled question, that how to sell sense. Beanie Babies.
That makes a lot of sense.
I have hundreds.
So do I. Yeah. I've got them like
me too.
Wait. You two have hundreds. I have none.
Yeah.
Would you like to buy mine?
You didn't have kids in the 90s.
Oh, there we go. There we go.
Mary, you must have a ton.
Oh, I have a whole Rubbermaid thing full.
Yeah.
Why don't you guys throw them out?
Because they're supposed to be
valuable.
Yeah,
they're going to be very valuable someday.
They will with the cabbage patch.
So pick a state, and I'll tell you what the how-to question is.
How about Hawaii?
Hawaii, how to fish.
Okay, that makes sense.
How about California?
Actually, I take that back. That's Alaska's how to fish. Hawaii, how to be a ninja.
Is that true?
Yeah, it is.
California,
how to spot a narcissist.
These are true?
Is it true? I'm not making them up. Yeah.
Florida,
how to get out of Florida. That's kind of funny, actually.
That I believe.
But these are not made up. It's from the site estately.com.
Can I do one more?
You can do whatever you want.
Texas,
how to sell your soul.
Come on, is that really true? People Google how to sell your soul?
Yeah. How about this one? New Mexico, how to ask a girl out.
Oh.
Right?
Hey, how you doing?
Colorado, how to grow marijuana. Makes sense, right?
Oh, yeah, the dispensaries.
Washington State, how to survive an earthquake.
Oh.
Minnesota, this seems so perfect. Minnesota, long winter in Minnesota. What do you think?
Ice fishing.
No, it's not ice fishing.
No?
It's about sex.
Nope.
How to catch an elk.
How to quilt.
Quilt?
I got the whole winter. I'm going to quilt.
How to find a moose.
Next door in Michigan. How to quit drinking, the number one most Googled how-to question. Dave, do you have a Michigan place?
Mary.
Come on.
Will you say
funny.
Something to
come
him,
Come on,
please.
That is pretty good.
It's not very nice, Steve.
Do you have Thank a you. Stupid Michigan
Sorry,
place?
I take it back.
Do I have to come down there?
It's a summer home.
How about Wisconsin?
Wisconsin, how to impeach a governor.
Oh, I thought that would be Illinois.
Yeah, wouldn't you?
How to cook a bratwurst.
Well, you know, a lot of anger about Scott Walker, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
This seems fitting. Arkansas, with all the Bill Clinton news, how to talk dirty.
Oh, hey, baby.
Most Googled how-to questions in every single state.
Wait, how about New York, since Trump and Hillary will both be there on election
day? How to explain mansplaining.
How to explain mansplaining?
I have no idea why that would be the number one Googled question.
Okay, that's weird.
You know what mansplaining is? Mansplaining
no
is a male explanation to anything.
All right, so give me a mansplanation then.
Well, like you would say, I'm having a problem with a friend of mine. She said this, I said that. She said this, I said that. And I give you the typical male 10-second solution on how to fix it.
It'd be that long?
What, roll your eyes?
The 10-second?
I never roll my eyes. Roll my eyes is such a short fuse with me, I never do it to anyone else. This is my favorite one maybe in the entire country. In Kansas, the number one most Googled question is how to find Kansas.
Oh. Wait, isn't man spreading when you spread your legs too far apart?
Mansplaining.
Oh.
That's very, very different.
Oh.
Mansplaining. And there's this, Louisiana, how to make love.
Oh.
Gotta believe there's a lot of preteens.
With your cousin.
There's like, you know, but a preteen how-to question probably makes sense. Probably a lot of preteens on this.
I think so.
Could be.
Yeah. Except we're hoping not for the people who live in Kansas. They don't know how to find themselves. Where am I, dude?
But how to ask a girl out, that type of thing. You know?
Ryan locked these poor guys in Kansas.
Nevada, where's the Kansas? Number one most Googled question in Nevada, you would think, is how do I get home with no money? No, it's how to survive a zombie apocalypse.
What?
Wow.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
yeah.
It's almost Halloween.
It's stately.com if you want to see the whole list back after this on 720 WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
I will take the truck. You can take the minivan.
You'll take the truck. I'll drive the minivan. You're not kidding right now, are you?
Where's Travis?
He went to the tanning salon.
Oh! You know what's the matter with the world these days?
Sure, let's discuss that.
What's going on?
Travis said that Glee is dumb.
Is that what's worrying? Is that why you're crying? What's Glee? None of my girls are talking to me. Usually I think that's a great idea.
Your girls are talking to you. You just need to listen to them.
Huh?
I think Tim Allen's here. Great to see you, by the way. And I think that's the original promo.
Early on, yes.
Yeah, I mean, that's really early on. It goes back to 2011. Last Man Standing, major syndication situation, going to be on Channel 9, WGN-TV, and we're very happy about that here at the Tribune Media Empire.
Wow.
You're sitting in an empire, pal.
My God, look at this.
Right?
Everybody's in a big king's chair. There's crowns everywhere.
It's unbelievable.
Look at this place. Unbelievable.
It's like Galaxy Quest without the space.
Hey, good one. I like that.
Very entertaining movie, by the way. Anyway, congratulations on Last Man Standing. I looked this. Do you know you did 112 episodes?
Yeah, yes, I should say.
That's heavy lifting in modern TV.
Well, especially in today's market, you know, binge watch, it's things on Netflix, people walk around with their phones on. It's a very strange market. I feel blessed to be able to do this twice in my life, Home Improvement and this one. I said I have family members that still don't know I'm on TV. This is one of those.
It's pretty crazy. Now, here's the thing. I think the next one, you get an inn in Vermont. With a hot wife and a sweater.
Nice.
Yeah, what do you think? Like, is it working for you?
Me in a sweater and no pants. It's a whole new thing.
By the way, we just had a very heated discussion off the air about the validity of shorts because you couldn't be more wrong about this.
Well, I can't use my vernacular I use in Vegas because I use more expletives, but yeah. I said there's a certain age that men, you just got to cut the shorts.
And you stopped wearing shorts at what age?
About 11.
Maybe 11?
Well, 11,
12?
12. Summer, when I used to play a lot and trip every now and then, and you'd skin your knee, but you go get those Sears with the pants that had double knees in them. I can't remember the name. They were horrible pants.
Right. Tell them why you're defending this, though.
I'm defending this because I wear shorts 8 months of the year.
That's not my problem. My problem is...
You haven't seen my calves. You'd wear shorts, too.
That's all. What do you need to see a man's hairy calf for? What was that about?
It's not hairy. It's muscular and beautiful.
Well, whatever.
I won Mr. Calf 3 years running.
Mr. Calf. That's weird. I did
it
too.
Is, yeah,
I got
this is
Mr.
Our life,
I got Mr. Glute.
I just feel bad because I bet you've got great legs.
You know,
when was the last time you've seen your own legs?
Kind of uncomfortable.
right now.
Do you want me to go look?
I was kind of uncomfortable. No, literally, I got in the shower today, and I said, "No, they're not bad." My wife says it, but I just don't think men should wear shorts.
I love this.
Maybe you should have shorts. Maybe that's good. Backpack shorts, ball caps backwards, all that.
Well,
stuff.
I agree with you on the
grow
backpack.
Grow up.
I agree with
and
you on
no
the backpack.
No more gummies. I don't need prostate medicine in a cherry gummy. Everything's a gummy because adults, because we can't chew or swallow a
Take
pill.
Take a friggin' pill.
Swallow it, little liquid, you're done. You don't sit there. Oh, look at that. It's raspberry.
Oh, it went down the wrong way. Phil, you're 45. Suck it up.
What's the wrong way?
Yeah.
What's the wrong? I know the wrong way. I've had that exam. I know that's the wrong way. But
well, listen, I don't want to get too deep into this, and I mean this literally, but we all grew up, Dave, you as well. Yeah. There was a word that our mothers might use, and it goes like this. You were going to have to use a suppository. Now, I don't want to talk about this, but I'm
telling you.
You
just did. How did this come out?
I don't want all a rehearsal. you don't want any of that in your life. Any of it.
No, but, I don't.
I mentioned Last Man Standing on Channel
9. Yeah, I know.
Now.
It's good.
What happened to the other call letter? That's what I want to know. I grew up in Detroit. We had WJR. You have WGN. What is one?
World's greatest newspaper.
That's literally what it stands for.
Really?
For the Tribune. Yeah.
What does WJR mean from Detroit? That was their big radio station. Yeah. But that early, you guys are like...
It's still there.
I know. The Pioneers in Boston.
Yeah, one of the originals.
Boston is KZO. What's the one in Boston?
WBZ.
WBZ.
Yeah, but you guys are the last of the real radio stations.
That's exactly right. The rest of this business is trash. You are in the mecca, baby.
I'm right here. I feel it.
Sitting on Michigan Avenue.
Yeah, baby.
Yeah.
It's cold in the middle of summer. I like it.
You are such a puss about this.
Don't say that word.
Wimp.
Don't say that. Say wimp because you can't say grabbing that word now anymore. Those
no, but here's
words.
The thing. You and I were talking off the air about this as well. Once you were wrong about the shorts, we were also talking about the cold. You're a tough dude from Michigan.
Well, I said I came here. I performed a lot in Chicago, and I walked out of the water tower one morning in the middle of February, and I turned the corner, and I thought my lungs froze. This is an illegal place. You walk in that wind, and I went, God, this. And I thought Detroit was tough, and I went to Central Michigan University and Western Michigan, but Mount Pleasant was in this open field, and it would be just like that. But you guys are a hearty brew here in Chicago.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you wear your shorts in the winter, which
is nice.
Except
for the football team.
What? Football team? What's wrong?
Bears not good. Not good.
Listen, you're talking to a Lions fan? You're talking about not good?
As a matter of fact, the only win we have is against the Lions.
Thank you for bringing that up.
Yeah, okay.
That's a good one to hear.
Next thing you know, I'll put my shorts on. Last man standing. Take me back. It's 2000, I'm guessing, 10. Somebody's asking you to do another TV series. You get asked about these all the time after Home Improvement.
Right.
Why did this one make a difference?
Well, originally I came... I wanted to do another film with Disney. We had three films lined up. Disney switched over their production budget to different. Touchstone went away. So Wild Hogs, which we are rebooting, I believe we will do another Wild Hogs. I said a couple of movies. I said I was touring, doing comedy, and then CBS actually came up with they said we'd like the sitcom, and they had an idea. Their idea was really clever. It was about an internet-based TV show where they're very clever at CBS. And then I said, well, it didn't seem to work. We couldn't get it down. Met with a bunch of writers. I said, if you were to do something, what would it do? And I said, I'm not a genius like that. Everything about Home Improvement I loved. It was an odd grip, but I'd rather have three daughters. I have all daughters. I'd like to do daughters.
Right.
I have to break the wall somehow. So I have to have an internet piece of business,
right,
a vlog. Let's take a crack at that. And I went back and I said, anybody who's still alive from Home Improvement, I want to get all the camera guys on, the pet operators, all that stuff. And literally, most of the guys looked like they'd eaten their spouses. I said, wow.
Is that legal in California to be that big?
Well, of course, as long as it's with kale. As long as it's anything with kale,
you can eat your spouse.
Right. But in only guys will say up front, yeah, I'm fat now.
You know,
men are, they want to get over it right away. You see a guy I haven't seen in a while. Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
I'm fat. Okay, we're done with that conversation.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think women would ever say that to another woman.
Yeah, you know, walking up, Phyllis.
Boy,
wow.
are you
a tanker?
Yeah. What'd you eat your husband?
We would say, you don't think I look fat, do you?
Yeah. Or how's this blouse look? They are always softer about it.
A little blousy.
But the show ended up good. ABC put us on. You know, it's a very different world now. It's not like...
People don't watch TV like these.
They don't. My nieces, if I weren't on TV, I don't think they'd watch the show.
I don't know about you. My kids are 29 and 25, And they, you know, like yours, Dave, they've grown up in a world where they'll watch it whenever they want to watch it. It messes me up. Because we grew up in a world where Friday night you knew what this was
exactly.
On. Saturday, this is a, Saturday was the greatest night in television in the 70s.
Right. Sure. Sunday was even a, it was kind of a family night. Disney had that Disney show. But this is dating me. But I grew up when I was a kid, TV went off at 11.
Okay, I had 1 a.m. I'm not
that
far
behind.
Well,
you remember that was an Indian, and then a few jets flew over, and then
Well, you got the anthem. You got the anthem and the white noise.
And then there was a weird station in Detroit. It was Channel 50. They came on. They were on even later, and some weird guy with movies. They had, but they were on.
Oh, he was a commie, obviously.
Yeah,
he's up at that.
Yeah, I mean, clearly, well, Detroit. Of course, it was a commie.
Complete commie, please. So, Last Man Standing. You get the first script. You get the second. People have no idea how many meetings you have to go. Even if you're Tim Allen, the meetings you have to go through to develop these shows to get them going. It's a friggin' miracle.
Well,
that
miracle that you
made.
Get it going, and then Jack Burdick, who wrote the original script. He and I, this is the most voracious writer, wrote for Saturday Night Live, and this is a great writer, and we came up with a show. He said, that's a good show. I wouldn't do it. And then we looked at each other, not happy about either that meeting, and that guy rewrote it the next day. And I said, listen, I just want the three daughters. I don't want all these other kids. I don't want, keep it simple. I want a family that goes to church. I want a family that eats together. So it's really about a family, but the guy, I want him, Archie Bunker, but educated.
Yeah.
So he has a real point of view.
He loves his family. He's a little out of touch maybe in a couple of areas,
what?
But I really love him.
A little out of touch?
I'm back on the shorts thing, aren't I? Right back to the shorts.
Speaking of touch, yeah.
But I really do love the show. And I got to tell you, I love your TV wife. I go back to Mike Myers and So I Married an Axe Murderer and young Nancy Travis.
Well, the woman she was in with, Richard Gere and Garcia, that's the one I remind her of all the time.
Yeah, I couldn't watch that
one. She had shorts on in the whole movie.
Yeah,
she wore shorts.
Yeah.
I remind her, have you seen that? What is it? A bad cop? Richard Gere played a really bad cop.
Yeah.
And she has a really hot scene with Garcia in a bedroom. And I said, Jesus, Nancy.
It must be great when you remind her of that right before
I
you do
all. I remind her of that all the time. We should get into that kind of stuff.
Internal affairs, right?
Yeah, internal affairs. That's
it.
It was really a good movie. Yeah,
she's a unique talent, right? Because she's got comedy chops and she can. Oh, you don't like her.
I love it. I was shaking my head because unless you watch the show, Hector Alessandro was terrific. This guy, he did a movie with Spartacus, the original Spartacus.
Yeah, who didn't?
Literally, you know, Greek Spartacus.
Oh, the Spartacus. Oh, sorry.
It was a little gag.
Let me catch up.
Because I did a movie with Spartacus. I mean, literally. With Hector will bring up stories about Victor Mature. I mean, he's got stories.
Been around.
God. And then lately, Leno's been on.
Okay.
As one of the guys in the...
Have you done his show?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
CNBC?
Yeah.
His car show, yeah.
Yeah.
He's a class guy. I mean, it's funny to have him on as an actor. And the cast is everyone's good. The girls, all three of the girls are.
Show's terrific.
Thanks very much.
Last Man Standing, WGN TV. When do you guys premiere? I don't have the note in front of me. Anybody in the room know when we go on Channel 9?
Already premiered. September.
It's always good to hear. It's already
September.
Been on.
September.
It's already been
How's
on.
It going?
We have to ask you, there's an upcoming episode where you, Don. Well, I should call you Don. You look like you dress up like Donald Trump. Is that for Halloween?
That's for Halloween. That's the network version, which is on 7 o'clock on ABC on Friday, and then we have the syndicated ones on 8 to 9 on WGN.
Yeah, and you should pay attention to the 8 to 9 episodes because there'll be a quiz later on, and that way you'll be ready for it.
Yeah, I played I played Donald Trump, and it was the weirdest because I'm trying to get the writers. This guy plays a conservative, you know, and we want to pay homage to that. It was trying to get a joke that could. Trump supporters would laugh at, because I said it's easy to be nasty to Hillary and Trump, is like Abbott and Costello, as I call them. This is like, or the first election, it was Cheech or Chong. I can't decide.
Right.
You go, well, he smokes a lot of pot, but he doesn't seem to speak very well. I can't really decide which one I vote for. But we had so much fun with this because, well, you have to watch it. We paid homage to him.
What are you going to do now?
This minute, I'm going to have a little sip of coffee.
No, I mean. After the show, I thought you and I could hang out, go short shopping.
Well, I want to get some cargo shorts and Birkenstocks and maybe a tank top. Men in tank tops. That went away, didn't it? Gay people stole that from straight people. You can no longer wear a tank top.
Well, because gay people work harder to stay in shape so they can look good in the tank top.
I understand, and they know how to put on self-tanner. That's just the whole thing.
Yeah.
Straight guys have lost the ability to wear a tank top.
Let me ask you a question.
Here it comes.
The Michigan spots that you do, the commercials.
Yes, sir.
I believe with all my heart that you love every single inch of Michigan when I hear you do that. Those are some of the greatest reads ever.
Coming from the radio world, and I worked with some of the Paul Frees, Mike Carroll, who taught me back in Detroit how to do radio commercials. I was astounded how good these voiceover talents were. And when they approached me when I was doing Wild Hogs, the first one.
Okay.
Young guy from McCann Erickson, and I've never had a guy direct me. He goes, "You know, you're starting to sound like a DJ." And I go, and I was going, "I want to come through that mic and strangle
right,
you," because that's
right,
what
right.
I always wanted to be a DJ.
Yeah.
And he said, "Settle it down, pull it back, less. And this guy directed me so that I started loving doing those commercials. Plus, I have a just up the coast here, and I have a place in Leland, Michigan.
Right.
I've traveled all around Michigan, actually from Colorado originally, moved to Michigan, and I loved all the water, loved being near cars and all that stuff.
So we can believe that you're giving it to us straight.
Well, they write, that is, if you know good copy in radio, good copy's everything.
Yeah, and of course.
This copy is some of the best copy. And plus this young director still is pushing me to make it real. And I love, there are parts of Michigan, just like parts of Illinois, that you're going, "Are you kidding me?" I mean, I'm reading this going, "The lovely bean fields of Saginaw."
Right.
I'm going, "Oh, boy."
And yeah, right. I'd like to hear him do like a straight read on 8 Mile.
Right. Well, but they've got Detroit in there.
Yeah.
They've got Flint.
Yeah.
They've had, and I'm going, "Can we stop for a minute? Has anybody been to Flint?"
Right.
You know, Bay City, Flint.
It's tough.
But there is a beautifully well-written, and arguably some of the parts of that state are undiscovered if you haven't. But people in Chicago have gone up.
It's beautiful. In Leland, you got a bunch of stars in Leland now.
Yeah. Well, it's a beautiful.
Who else is up there? Let's out the entire neighborhood. Who else is up there with you?
Donald Trump, Hillary. They both have
They got a place together?
They got a place together.
Oh, that's sweet.
Most
that's
people good. Don't know that they have a thing.
Yeah.
They have
There is your October surprise.
Yeah. Well, they didn't know.
Yeah.
Who knew?
Yeah.
That, you know, they both like it.
Yeah. We started yelling, "Get a room."
Right.
Yeah.
They high-five each other right after the debate. A lot of hugging.
Playing us like a fiddle.
Oh, I'm not kidding. They were leg wrestling. I caught that. It was. You don't see a lot of that.
You don't see a lot of that.
She's very, very strong.
Yeah. You know why? Strong calves.
Yeah. She wears cargo shorts.
Yeah. Yeah. I was telling Andre, I'm pitching a show right now for her. It's Say Yes to the Pantsuit.
Yeah.
And I think it's going to be great. You know, they struggle over a pantsuit decision. Mom comes in, doesn't like it. She finally picks one at the end. It's very emotional.
But it takes 30 minutes to make a decision, so it'll fit the sitcom time, right?
I think it's good.
And in between, we run a lot of commercials for Last Man Standing on WGN-TV, Channel 9. Not my first day. Well, stand-up. I got 30 seconds. You can do some more stand-up? You going to go on the road?
Yeah, I'm at the Mirage in Las Vegas coming up November 4th and 5th at the Mirage, which I perform randomly.
I can make some calls. I say I book a show for you and I and Zany's January 15th, as long as it's 12 or below.
Well, that'll be perfect. Zany's right on Wells, isn't it? North Wells.
You don't forget where you start.
No, hell no.
Good man. One of the great stand-ups of all time as well, Tim Allen. Great seeing you, man. It's been a long time.
Yes, it has.
We'll do that fake show business hug thing and say we'll stay in touch here in just a second.
Nice shorts.
Yeah, thanks. Get your hand off me.